You are listening to Mr. Apex Podcast. We love MotoGP. Hello and welcome to Mr. Apex MotoGP Podcast. This is a show put together by MotoGP fans pretending to be experts. We aim to have a race review show ready for your midweek commute. We may not be bike races, but we love it. As ever, I am your host Kyle Power, and today I am joined in my virtual shed by some fellow MotoGP enthusiasts. We have the returning Dutch journo extraordinaire, Jules Seegers. How's it going, Jules?
Hi, Kyle. Fired up for the first real episode of the season.
Excellent. And from the darkest depths of Northern England, we have the gravy bothering, Danny Henney. How's it going, Danny?
I'm good, thanks, Kyle. Looking forward to discussing the first race of the season.
Cool. And back from his globe-trotting travels, we have GP-attending superfan, smooth-talking Texan, Adam Rosales. How's it going, Adam?
Hey, good. I don't know what day it is. I just got back from Bahrain a few days ago, and unfortunately I couldn't stay in Qatar, but feels good to be home.
Excellent. We are very, very jealous. Very jealous. So, it's round one. It's a new season. Finally, it is here, and the wait is over. We may have not got the race that we were all hoping for, but it was still a race full of intrigue. So going into the weekend, we've obviously had testing is finished. The new Ducati is looking absolutely mighty. We have a new potential Marc Marquez wonder kid on the horizon in Pedro Acosta. We've got the Japanese manufacturers trying to reinvent themselves and claw their way back up the grid. And we have a bit of American on the grid with Trackhouse Aprilia, which is nice to see. So there's quite a few headlines from testing, but all of the headlines were coming into the actual weekend and in practice and quali. So guys, at the start, who was looking really quick for you coming out of the blocks in practice? I mean, Martin was looking pretty good and the Aprilias were looking good, but anybody, where were the Yamahas and the Hondas?
Simple, at the back. They're not going to be challenging this year as much as it'd be good to see them get in the mix. But yeah, unfortunately, I think they're going to be bringing up the back of the pack for most of the season.
I got a little excited seeing some top speed from the Yamahas, but they just don't seem to have it over pace or over laps. I think they might just be getting too much wheel spin again. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, it's odd. There were some positive signs in testing, but that all seems to have gone away, and I bet Luca Marini is kicking himself over some of his decisions over the winter to join Honda. What I personally found quite surprising was, and especially after testing, was the relatively meek, mild and sensible appearance of Marc Marquez on the Ducati. There was no spectacular saves or crashes or anything. It looks like he's really, really settling in and taking a sensible approach, which I don't think anybody kind of expected for Marc Marquez, really.
Yeah, I genuinely thought someone had borrowed his kit and put his helmet on and got on the bike. It's so different to see Marc Marquez ride a bike in that style. It's just miles away from what we're used to, but it's going to be interesting for the season to see if he can keep adapting.
It was also pretty funny to hear him say after the sprint, but also after practice, I think that he said, like, I need to stay out of racing in groups, because once I start racing in groups, my instinct takes over and I start doing dangerous and risky stuff, you know. So you could see, but also like hear him talk about how cautious he still is, I guess.
Yeah, he's trying to keep the real Marc Marquez in the closet and bottled up for when he's really comfortable. I think that's what you were just about to say, Adam, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's him growing up and realizing he's only got so many more operations on his arm left.
Yeah, very good point. So all over practice, it was looking good. Acosta was looking sensational in practice. I mean, he had a couple of Marquez-esque saves, and I think he's really put himself as... I'm getting vibes with Marc Marquez first coming to the championship, and this Acosta is setting the world alike, and he looks like he's really not afraid to push that bike and is instantly quick. But coming into qualifying then, and no surprise, after who was one of the strongest riders here last year, it was Jorge Martin he puts it on pole. But the surprise for me, really, was Aleix Espargaró on the Aprilia. I mean, splitting up all of those Ducatis. So the new gen of Ducatis, which I believe Bagnaia's on it, obviously Bastianini's on it, and Martin, the Pramac guys are on it, but the other ones are all on the 2023 bike. So it was really, this 24 bike looks really, really, really strong. And Bagnaia said it was a step in the right direction in just about everywhere. But as we'll get onto later, they started to encounter a few little sort of setup problems during this race. A rather sort of mild Marc Marquez, I'm going to call it, in sixth, but again, really, really strong. And Brad Binder gets the KTM up in fourth place. So Acosta getting eighth as well. So it's really, really shaping up. So it's going to be a really good start to the season. And a shout out to Raul Fernandez putting the Trackhouse Aprilia into Q2 as well and qualifying 12th. That is a very much a worthy mention. But Jules, there were some quite anonymous people during qualifying, I noticed. Where on earth was Bezzecchi?
Yeah, he wasn't even in the television broadcast. Nobody really saw him, and that was pretty peculiar because during the tests he was pretty much up there where you'd expect him, and his new teammate DiGiantonio was there. He actually had a real proper qualifying next to I think Andrea Bastianini, who actually qualified in front of Bagnaia. But apart from the obvious absentees on the Japanese manufacturer bikes, Bezzecchi really had a not only a bad quali, but even like an anonymous race, and he just couldn't get things started.
Yeah, it's really, really odd. And he is obviously, it's a new bike for him, but he was on the 22 Ducati last year and he's upgraded to the 23 Ducati, which we know is a world championship winning bike. It's really good, but it seems to have totally thrown him off. Digi's had this same change. He's on a new bike for him as well. But yeah, it's completely thrown him off and it's really sort of shocking. It just goes to show how much feeling and a rider's personal settings means to them, because we saw this midway through last year with Digi just being pretty much nowhere and all of a sudden throwing the rule book out the window, going wild on the setup and all of a sudden finding something he's comfortable with and all of a sudden being a front runner. So it was shocking to see Bezzecchi manage to do that in reverse somehow and go backwards. So we had a grid looking very good going into the race, Danny. And so what were your thoughts going in on predictions?
I thought it was going to be a solid race. Obviously Martin's at the front. You've got the usual front runners. Few people missing down the pack, but I was interested to see if it followed the same form as it did at the end of last season. Is Martin going to sprint away? Is Bagnaia going to do the thinking man's race? And then seeing how it all played out.
Yeah, and one other really notable mention we had here is a bit of a freak accident, well, not even an accident, a freak occurrence of rain in the desert. So we had a rain affected Friday, and that's incredible. So Adam, you were recently in this part of the world, and seeing rain on a Friday, how shocking is that to you? Like, what's it like over there? Is it inconceivable?
So, I mean, not entirely. I was surprised how cold it was in Bahrain. I got to the circuit before the sun went down, and it felt nice. But then once the sun went down, it was just cold. And so Qatar isn't too far away from there, and rain isn't completely unheard of. It does happen. I mean, we saw the drain situation in Bahrain during free practice. Or testing, I believe. But it does rain. It's not super uncommon, but I was glad that Dorna took the initiative to try to prevent a little bit of injuries to some of the riders by knowing that, hey, these guys are going to push regardless of what the weather is. And I do appreciate that they decided to kind of make the wet practice kind of untimed or more of a free practice than what was setting the times for Q2.
Yeah, that's really good. And knowing that they have this flexibility as well, just to do that and mess around their schedules, they kind of put Formula One to shame, really, and how flexible the MotoGP organizers can be. I remember we did have this in Qatar. I think it may have been 2012. I seem to remember Jules Cluzel in Moto2 trying to go round in very wet conditions at Qatar. So it has happened before, but does seem a bit of a freak occurrence. So freak occurrences going into sprint races are usually quite good. It usually means that we can have a bit of a exciting sprint race. So for the sprint review then, and straight off the bat, Jorge Martin means business. He gets the whole shot, which is obviously super, super important. Just go and get out to protect his front tire pressure. Now, luckily, that's something we don't have to talk about too much. During the show, but Jorge Martin gets the whole shot and seems to try to disappear off at the front, and we've seen this before. And Binder gets a really, really fast start as well. But guys, what happened to Miller? Looks like he got absolutely mugged in the opening laps and just plummeted.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad to see. Miller's, he just seemed different. I don't know if something was off or if he didn't have his normal off season of riding Australian superbikes, but it just, he didn't seem like the Miller we've seen in previous years. He's usually on it kind of early in the year and tends to fade a little bit, but it just seemed like something wasn't clicking for him. It could be the new bike. It could be that maybe they geared it or set it up towards Binder's preference, because if you compare the two of them, Binder was just flying.
Yeah, Binder was looking really good. And with the Red Bull Formula One team aero influence on that bike, a bit like the Aprilia, they're looking really good in some of the high speed, and Binder's saying the bike is really good and superb and he can brake really deep on it and is really happy. And if you've got someone like Brad Binder, who's renowned as the last of the late breakers, saying he can brake even deeper than E4 believable, that's a scary prospect for a lot of the opposition, really. So in these first opening laps, Pedro Acosta is really making a name for himself. He's trying to settle himself in and is really, really not shy at all, and is having some absolutely great battles. Great battles. Were any of you shocked to see him get stuck immediately in? Because I thought he was going to be a little calmer, Danny.
No. I think we've seen enough of him in Moto3 and Moto2 to know that he's very much the aggressive rider, and he's, if he sees a chance, he's going to go for it. As you said earlier, very reminiscent of Marc Marquez.
And also, he had the great start to ride like this, but it wasn't a great start because he got away really awful, and his rear was all over the place. So he actually dropped to P11, but being dropped further behind, that made it possible for him to get into the action real quick. And like Danny said, I think he showed what everybody wanted to be shown by him, and he really, really made up for all the promise that was made over the winter.
That's a good point. I forgot he made a terrible start and then started getting fighty to fight his way back. That's why it was so good. I completely forgot about that, and that is one of the problems with having too many races in a weekend to watch. Marquez, again, I'm going to say it again, steady, kind of unspectacular, looked like he was taking it fairly easy. The one person who was looking really strong and fighty was Aleix Espargaró on that Aprilia, though, and his late race pace was looking mighty, setting him up to be one of the favourites for the Moto Grand Prix, which I thought was quite a shock, really. I never really had Espargaró down as being strong, really, really, really strong at this track, and I just thought he would have faded, but he just seemed to get stronger, Danny, throughout the race.
He showed glimpses of this last season, though, didn't he? You'd have the normal riders up at the front, and then every other race, Espargaró would get up and get in the mix and be one of the favourites for the race win, or he'd be battling with them, be there late in the race. But yeah, he has these moments where he can come from kind of being off the pace and all of a sudden being in it to win it.
Yeah, so that's like really good for Espargaró, and really good to see the Aprilias up there. We want more of the manufacturers up there. It was just such a shame we weren't seeing a Honda or a Yamaha particularly anywhere near the front of the field, which is becoming really, really apparent now that they're probably in even worse shape than they were last year, which I find quite incredible. But somebody who is certainly in worse shape than they were last year at this track was Digi, and Digi worried me a little bit there, guys. Like, we just caught the end of the crash originally on the coverage, and he was rolling around, seemed to get up and then hit the deck again, and I was like, oh no, like he's hurt himself. Obviously, the adrenaline, you get up and then realize you're injured and he went down. But I think it was more of just his pride, and he was a little bit shocked of what happened. Because when you saw the replay back, Adam, it looked like it spat him off and then he ended up on the road in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, it looked like he had a pretty hard impact. And I didn't really focus on it too much, but it looked like he either might maybe hit his head or an ankle, because typically when you try to stand up and you immediately fall down, that's usually some kind of leg injury or your back. So it could have just been just a hard impact that really just kind of disoriented him. It's sad to see, because he's showing some really good pace.
Yes, amazing. Since he made those setup changes last year, he's been pretty much a permanent fixture in the top 10, hasn't he? He's been a permanent fixture at the front, so it's really nice to see him get that ride. And also, I'll say something now. When I saw the pictures of the VR46 bikes and their livery come in, I almost threw up. I thought it was grotesque. The yellow and the white, it was absolutely awful, Danny. But actually looking on the coverage, I think it looks really good. It was harping back to Nastro Zero Rossi.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we're sitting here saying, what happened to Bezzecchi? Where did he go? He went missing. How can you go missing on that bike? You can see it from miles away. But even with being a Rossi fan, I'm not a massive fan of delivery, but you can certainly tell it's Valentino Rossi's bike that they're running.
So I go to a lot of races, and whenever I see a livery reveal, I judge it as like, oh, that's going to look great in the sun, or it's going to be easy to spot, easy to tell, because when every bike is dark blue, when you're there, it's harder to see. And so when you have a bike that is bright yellow and white, that's different. It reminds me of kind of the 90s. And I love it. I thought it was great at first, and I'm excited to see it in Austin in person.
Yeah, I remember when I was marshalling as well, and this is for just domestic championships and MotoGP, I like distinctive liveries, and I knew who the liveries, because my eye isn't the best. You struggle to see the numbers coming towards you. So you see like a red bike where you've got race control in your ear saying blue flags for number so-and-so, and you're like, right, I know what the colour of their bike is when they start to come round, and you're trying to track the race. So yeah, I like that, Jules.
Yeah, and the team that kind of didn't meet up to that expectation is the Honda factory team that had the white and orange and deep blue colors, the Repsol livery for years, for like decades. And for this year, they got rid of the white and it turned into black, like we haven't got enough black liveries yet. Pramac did the same. It's we haven't seen much of the Honda, but it's less distinctive now as well. But maybe the colorway isn't their biggest problem at this moment.
Just while we're on liveries, I just want to say Pramac for me, oh my God, they've gone from one of my favorite liveries to, I like both colors they're using, but they do not mix one bit. That's just my quick one on that. They've gone from gorgeous to, yeah, let's not look at that much.
I love it. I think it's great. It's cool to see purple. When was the last time there was a purple bike?
I agree. I like the purple. It does look like somebody's given a toddler some felt tip pens, though. I'm not the biggest fan of it. So
prototypes. Like, it's got to be different.
That's all good. So the sprint was quite good. We had quite a lot of action early on, and then it kind of starts to spread out a little bit. And I was really hoping that Marc Marquez was going to get a podium, but then he makes his mistake, and you could see he was starting to struggle a little bit, made his mistake, goes wide, drops back to fifth. So over the line, it was Martin has quite a commanding win, Binder a fantastic second, Espargaró third, but with some scary late race pace as well, which is really setting him up for the Grand Prix. Bagnaia, a rather sort of stealthy fourth, really. The defending championship opened up his account with a fourth. Marc Marquez, a sensible fifth. Never thought I'd say that. Bastianini, Alex Marquez, and then a Pedro Acosta recovering after fighting, coming home eighth, which I think is a really good, start to his career. But Jules, that was a fast race. That was a very fast race versus last year.
It was really fast, and it was actually 11 seconds quicker than Martin won the sprint back in November.
Wow, that's insane.
Of course, it's a bit difficult to compare one-on-one because it's different time of year, etc., but still 11 seconds on a sprint length, it says a lot about the 24 bikes. But it was also, it wasn't like he was the only one. The results, they were really close. So it looks like the top half of the field has made a really big step pace-wise.
Yeah, and it's quite incredible. So all of the manufacturers, apart from Yamaha and Honda, by the looks of it, have actually made a massive leap forward. It looks like Yamaha and Honda have probably almost stayed somewhat stationary. It looks like they're behind in the aero development. They are now, as we said in our preseason show, they are starting to try to get some people and staff on board to catch up that aero, but they look like they're really, really hurting. So, Jules.
actually, Yamaha, after the sprint race, they came out and, or at least Fabio Quartararo, and he said, like, we're even worse off than during the test. Because during the test, it seemed like, oh, well, maybe Fabio can get into more than into the top 10. And maybe if he could fight for P5, I think we discussed it even in after the first test. But they said, like, the tire life is worse and everything felt bad compared to the test that wasn't too convincing already.
Yeah, that's no good. That's no good. So maybe they need to get more black on their bike to reflect their mood that they're probably in. The same thing with the Honda, that's gone darker, and all of their moods are, I'd imagine, are quite dark. So there was some interesting comments at the end of the sprint race, particularly from those riding the 2024 Ducati, and they mentioned the C word, which no riders like, and that was chatter. So they were getting quite a lot of chatter, and our illustrious trumpet playing producer Matt Trumpet has posed a fantastic question here, and he asked, what is chatter? All bikes had it to some degree. Is this a problem coming from the aero? And so I'll try to briefly explain here. So chatter is something that's not new in MotoGP. It's been going on for a long time. And basically, it can be caused by two things. It's mainly a grip imbalance from the front tire to the rear tire. And it usually happens when, this is going to sound like such an odd thing to say, but when there's almost too much grip. So the front tire will grip, let go, and then the rear tire will grip and let go very, very short in succession. So it almost sets off like a frequency, like a resonance. And the first time I ever heard of this was back in 1999 at the Velcom Grand Prix, and it was Seti Gibanow, I believe, when he was on a twin-cylinder, two-stroke Honda. And he got a podium on it, and he was explaining that he was suffering from chatter. And the way he explained it in the actual press conference was he was saying the bike was going through the corners, and it was basically bouncing. So it's a grip imbalance from the front to the rear tire, and basically it fights itself. So in real life, if you've ever been go-karting on an indoor concrete or polished surface, which I think most people have, when you start out it's all nice and smooth and you're going around smoothly, but when it rubbers up, the cart starts to bounce, and the front and the rear starts to bounce around the corner, and that's what chattering is. And it starts to chatter. And now in sort of fairly sort of recent history, one of the biggest ones that stands out is Rossi in 2006 on that Camel Yamaha, where all season they complained about they had chatter. And that wasn't that there was too much grip, but that was their chatter was caused by a resonant frequency from the frame. The frame was resonating at a frequency which just perfectly made a harmonic with the rest of the bike and caused this chatter and set off this resonance frequency. And once it started, they couldn't really stop it. And they couldn't dial it out all year. There was all sorts of problems. So chatter must be absolutely horrible to deal with. And Adam, you must have dealt with some chatter during your bike riding days.
Yeah, I've done a few track days that it's kind of hard to describe because I'm not a professional. I wasn't racing at the time, but I felt like I was pushing. But I was an older bike, some older tires, and it feels like it's a suspension bouncing. And normally it happens when you're at full lean, when you're kind of able to pay attention to the grip a little bit more because you're pushing to the edge of the wheel. And it feels like there's either bumps in the track or bumps. You feel like you're at the edge of the tire and you might just low side, but it just gives you that little break in confidence to keep you from twisting the throttle. And it doesn't let you get on the throttle as quickly as you would like to, just because it kills your confidence.
Yeah, it must be a really disconcerting feeling. So they're probably getting the chatter coming into the corners and mid-corner, and it just starts to happen, and it's just the bike's basically vibrating and bouncing. The front is fighting the rear. For our American listeners, and especially if you watch NASCAR, the best way to describe this would be when they're on a road course and they get something called wheel hop going into the corner when they change down a gear and the rear starts to bounce on the front. That is what chatter is. That's a more exaggerated scenario of it, but that basically in a nutshell is chatter. If you think our chatter is a load of nonsense and we have made a complete dog's dinner of explaining that, please feel free to get in contact on Twitter and point us out. We will have our socials at the end of this show. Right, so that comes to the end of our sprint review, and it's about this time in the show where I'd like to introduce and get to know our panel a little bit more by asking them, by asking them a bit of a question. Now, this is, as I said at the top of the show, this is a show put together by enthusiasts and fans pretending to be experts. We're allowed to be biased and have our biases. So the question I'm going to ask to all of us, including myself, is who would you like to win this year's title if you had to choose? Not who you think is going to win, who would you like to win and why? And because I'm the host, I'm going to go first. And I'm going to say, I really, really, really would like Mark Marquez to win this title. I am unashamedly a bit of a fanboy, but that's not because why I want him to win. I want him to win just because of the sheer turmoil and hell this guy has been through over the last few years from 2020. He has had an absolute nightmare of injuries and pain, and I'd love to see him jump on that Ducati and just, I don't even want him to win it spectacularly. I want him to win it nice and boringly and show that he's turned a leaf, and as Adam Bazal has said, he's pretty much grown up and become, you know, a bit more mature now and get it over the line. He can't take too many operations. So I would personally like Marc Marquez to win the title. Jules, who would you like to win?
I'm going for the bit of the question that is about who I'd like to win and not who I think, because I want to go for one of the Japanese manufacturers, just because I think the sport can do without strong Japanese brands. And I already think it's such a shame Suzuki quit, but also because I don't think any sport needs dominance for too long. And as much as I appreciate the Ducati efforts and the riding by Jorge Martin or Pecco Bagnaia, I think it would be really good for the sport if the Japanese had such a boost, like winning a world title again soon, just to keep them interested and in the sport, because it wouldn't be the first time that we would see a Japanese manufacturer leave out of a form of embarrassment or shame, and that would be really, really sad for the MotoGP.
Yep, I agree. Adam, who would you like to win?
I want Pecco to win. I want him to dominate the season, and I want him to cement his name as one of the greats, because I feel like when he first joined MotoGP, when he was on Pramac, he was kind of overlooked, or not overlooked, but he made a lot of mistakes. He wasn't consistent. And it's shown that he's been able to grow into the role of being the number one rider at Ducati. And he's got a couple championships to his name now. And this is his opportunity to kind of make himself one of the greats with multiple championships against some high caliber riders like Marc Marquez. So I'd really like for Pecco to get another championship in with Ducati.
That's fair enough. So you want, like me, a boring season?
A little bit. I mean, I like the spicy races too, but yeah. We'll see.
That's good. And finally, on to Danny. Danny, who would you like to win this title this year?
Well, we like things the same. So I would like Marc Marquez to win it. Unlike you, though, I don't want it to be boring. I'd like him to bed in a little bit for a couple of races and then just go absolute bonsai and go and win the championship in the last race or something through some crazy ride or something from the back of the grid.
That is a great answer, especially coming from a huge Rossi fan as well. Like, respect.
I know, how ironic's that? A couple of years ago, I couldn't stand him, but I'd like to see, even though he's not old, the old boy on the grid actually gain his former glory and see what he can do.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And one thing I would like to say is, like, in MotoGP, I don't think it has so much of the animosity that sort of Formula One seems to do and the tribalism about it. Now Rossi's retired, the sort of tribalism and riders versus riders sort of petered out a little bit. And I like all the riders. Like, I like all of them. I obviously prefer some over the others, but there are no riders in MotoGP, and hasn't been, I don't think, ever that I've genuinely disliked. I don't think there's ever been a rider I disliked. They're all absolute heroes, in my opinion.
I was just about to say, do you forget the early 2000s when there was Rossi, Gibbonau going at each other, Rossi, Biaggi? I mean, it is always the same person involved in the mix, but yeah, there's been some animosity in the past.
Oh, there has been, but not now. It is a lovely, happy place with unicorns and rainbows. So that brings us nicely on to our Grand Prix review. So then, guys, going into the main Grand Prix then, and after the sprint, Espargaró, everyone in the commentary is saying Espargaró is looking like the number one tip and he's got an amazing late race pace. But off the start, guys, I am, wow, like hands down to Pecco Bagnaia. What an aggressive start he has. And you can tell after the sprint, he knows he's got good pace. He wants to get to the front and protect that front tire and his temperature. But Adam, he really pushed his way to the front.
Yeah, he got up front. That's one of the fastest I've seen him get up front. Normally he likes to play it a little smart and reserved and follow for a bit before he kind of makes the statement pass the way he did. And once he got up front, he didn't look back. He just kind of rode his own race. And he wasn't outright being the fastest or, you know, the fastest lap, but he was doing what he does. It's riding smart, saving some tire and making sure it lasts the full distance. And that just goes to show that he's got the pace. Do it.
And you could hear afterwards how he really set his mind to being that aggressive in the opening stage, and you could see how badly he wanted it after that great getaway, how soon he overtook the two guys in front of him. Afterwards, Ducati guys, they explained how he changed his setup and only like tried it for 10 minutes during the warm-up, and how he, during the sprint, actually atypical for him, tried to get the lap time by taking speed into the corners and staying on a rather high speed in the corners, while his strong point actually always is like really late and hard braking. And he changed a bit of setup, and they explained that he took the Grand Prix to really try and attack the corners like with really late and hard braking without compromising too much corner speed. And he said like that was the mathematical trick for me to be able to ride the way I did.
I'm convinced now that Bagnaia actually sacrifices Saturday on purpose. Absolutely convinced that he goes in, he has a look, he goes, I'll take a top five, and just sees how the race goes, and then goes into Sunday with way more experience and knowledge than what the others have been working on. I think the others go for the ultimate sprint, as it's called, and I think he works just on race pace, and you see it every other Sunday.
That is very, very true. I mean, how many times, Adam, did we see this from him last year as well? Like last year, he seemed a bit out of sorts at the start of the weekend and even in the sprint, but then he finds something for the Sunday. He's very much seems to be the thinking man's rider.
Yeah, it seemed early last season, it seemed like they were having problems with the front end, and he kept having washouts up until, Le Mans. And it seems like that's kind of more resolved with the GP24. And so I think that that his approach might be a little bit more different because he might feel more confident in the front end. But I don't know if you guys watch AMA Supercross at all, but he's reminding me of Eli Tomac, who's pretty established as a champion, takes the heat races, just rides just fast enough to get into a qualifying position for the main event. Once the main event hits, he goes beast mode and he just goes all out and tries to be as fast as possible for the full race. And that's kind of what I was seeing from Pecco.
Yeah, super intelligent riding and not panicking, just staying calm. And we saw this at the back end of last year, and this is why he's a double world champion. And for all we've seen, it looks like he could maybe be cruising again. Marc Marquez also had quite a good start and was a bit more fighty this time and up to fourth, because he was looking like he could have some good race pace as well and still trying to figure out that Ducati. But the man that everyone thought was going to be really strong had a shocker and plummeted, and that was a Spagaro. Like, has anyone got any idea what was going on there? Because I heard some of his post-race comments, and once again, at Qatar, it seems like the evil tyre may have struck, because he just said he struggled from lap one to the finish and just plummeted and couldn't do anything with it. So he's blamed a dicky tyre again. So I don't know, is this a case of a dicky tyre again, or is this a case of him using excuses? Jules?
It sounded a bit like it, because he dragged in Michelin quite soon afterwards. And it was a bit of a mixed message, because he said like, I really dreamt that I was gonna win this race after a strong sprint performance, but then he said like it turned out to be a nightmare, and that was touching. But then he dragged in Michelin, like we heard at the end of last season a couple of times, like riders suffering from this mysterious bad tire. I think he just misgambled on the what happened to him during the sprint, where he had this really strong last phase of the race where the tire really came to him and he could start attacking really well. And now during the Grand Prix, it seemed like a lot of the riders suffered a lot less of the tire degradation, and the tires didn't fall off as hard as they appeared to do during the sprint. And so what his plan was, apart from suffering from not a great start, he wasn't able to make up the places like he had planned to.
I think part of it could be into play with the tire pressure rule change not having as a significant effect. And I think that they might have unpredicted or predicted wrong the outcome of the way that they set up the bike and their tires. I feel like Espargaro's tires, at least, he tried to push similar pace to the sprint, and I think he just killed it. I think he just fell off, because look at Mav's pace. I mean, you know, Mav didn't have the pace on Saturday, but they weren't very far apart on Sunday over the full race distance. And so I think it might have just been Espargaro kind of just killing the tire.
Okay. Talking of falling off, somebody else who fell off and had another shocker, unfortunately, was Miller. He had a very bad slip off, just one of these lazy sort of front end tucks. And we didn't actually see it, but we saw one shot of him sliding off, clearly like off the bike. And then it was about a second or two later, it cut back to him on the bike riding out the corner again. So how on earth he managed to get back on that quickly and carry on, I thought was really, really impressive. But particularly with Acosta making sort of waves, Danny, that was a shocker for Miller.
Yeah, I mean, I used to miss Cal Crutchlow, but with Miller on the grid, it's like having him back every race. yeah, it's a shame because I really like Miller. I really, really do. But I think Binder's broke him in the last couple of months. He just looks like a man what's pushing too hard and he's just having too many accidents.
It'd be the Acosta pressure as well getting to him.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the team principal, Francesco Guidotti, he was afterwards just plain out flirting with we already have Acosta and I would like Marc Marquez on a KTM too if I can. So it goes for Binder as well a bit, because he has a multi-year deal, but it seemed really odd that already after race one that their team principal was, discussing his rider duo already.
And who can blame him? Because Acosta made a great start in this race and was looking fighty, you know. By lap three, is already up to seventh and is putting some tough moves on people when he sets the fastest lap of the race. Now, everyone's in conserve mode at the moment, and I think it was quite obvious, and I kind of muttered to myself as I was watching this live, I was like, oh, it's just... He's in full bananas mode. He's going full Wang. He's just going to burn his tire. He's just going to go absolutely throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at it and just go for it and then probably just plummet in the last few laps. And that's pretty much exactly what happened. We've seen loads of rookies do this. It's probably one of the toughest races to make your debut, because this is, you have to play the thinking man's game and the long game. And you can see they're all sort of battling and sitting there kind of quite calmly, very calmly. And then you've got Acosta sort of sideways sliding it, just riding cowboy and just going for it. But it's absolutely great to see. So he manages to plug himself into this group of nine riders at the front, and they start breaking away from basically the Japanese manufacturers, where you've got the Honda and the Yamahas and some of the stragglers who aren't getting the best out of their bikes, just falling, plummeting away. And you can see the gaps opening up. But around about about his mid-race, sort of just after five laps in, you can tell it's starting to go into a bit of a cat and mouse waiting game. They're sitting there, they're quite comfortable. Miller, I think, has got some really good pace, but him and Jorge Martin are sitting there, and then they start to fight really, really hard. But why they start to fight really, really hard is on lap 13, Pecco Bagnaia, it's all sitting there calmly, he's sitting about half a second ahead of everyone, and it's all relatively calm. Then all of a sudden, bang, Pecco Bagnaia just pulls the pin and just drops his lap time. Yeah, about 13 to go, and just drops his lap time and just absolutely, he just pulls out about a second gap. And then that sort of spurs Miller and and Jorge Martin onto fighting, because I think they both think that they've got the better pace. And with these tire pressures and the front tire pressure, and you know, nobody wants to follow anymore, it's crucial to be ahead. They have increased the front tire pressure, or it's now they're allowed to lower it to 1.8 from 1.88 bar. So it's a little bit better, but still you can see, especially in this aero era of MotoGP, that following is not easy. So they start to fight really hard. Now, gents, going into turn one, I was shouting at the TV because they both seem to get a little bit desperate going into turn one. And I'm just like, guys, stop fighting. You are going to let Bagnaia get away, Adam.
So, yeah, I was really surprised with the KTM pace. Binder was passing Ducatis. It wasn't necessarily the draft. It just seemed like motor. He was able to do it consistently. They were back and forth, and it was just really cool to see. It's awesome to see another manufacturer actually being able to bring it to Ducati at Qatar on the straight.
Yeah, seeing the KTM go past the Ducati was quite a shock, to be fair. We've not seen many other bikes go past them, obviously, other than the Ducatis themselves. But it was certainly a good battle. Like you say, it was good. They were sat there just waiting. And then you could see both of them getting more and more eager, ready to go with Bagnaia. And once he dropped the pin, obviously that's when they started playing battles with each other. But yeah, it was good to see what they could do and if they could catch him up the road.
I thought it was a really, really good fight between those two. You know, overtaking each other for P2, and the first time when Binder went for Martin into turn one, they ran wide and he made it stick into turn two. I thought what was interesting is it, behind them, Marc Marquez was really close, and it felt like it was Binder and Martin for P2, but Marquez was really close and he had a look, and I was like, oh, is he gonna do it? And maybe like old Marc Marquez would have done it, but the still cautious one, he didn't go for it, which was a shame. It was really good to, you know, see him have a look if he could do him as well.
So I thought Mark was there. I thought he was going to try to fight for the podium, but then Costa comes along and doesn't care about worrying about the tire lasting the race distance. He's just sending it every single lap. And so that kind of, I think, threw off Mark's race strategy, because it looked like Mark was trying to follow the other Ducatis and trying to kind of, again, showing his maturity and trying to learn about the Ducatis, seeing the way Pecco rides, seeing the way Martin rides. And I felt like once Acosta kind of deviated, or, you know, made him deviate from that plan, that's when kind of things started to fall apart. Because shortly after Acosta fell back, it was kind of when Marquez started kind of dwindling a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Marquez there was just playing a very patient and very quiet waiting game. But if you're in Acosta's shoes, you can't really blame him. He's like, my idol, my hero is there in front of me. I have an opportunity to stuff him. And Danny, he absolutely took his opportunity and stuffed that'll be inside of turn one.
Yeah, I actually thought he was being quite mature, Acosta. He kind of blew past everybody. He got up to Marc Marquez, and then he kind of just sat and watched and thought, I'll see what these guys are doing. And then all of a sudden, you've seen the pack start to pull a bit, and he clearly thought, I'm not waiting here anymore, and went for it. But yeah, he's not afraid to have a go at the big boys in the sport, that's for sure.
Too soon, Junior, with his tires.
yeah, and yeah, it was a good point from Adam. I did think that kind of tripped Marquez's rhythm up a little bit. But, you know, fair play. Marquez always says this, that he's never afraid of someone putting a hard move on him, because he's put countless hard moves on other people. So it's all fair play. So he never really moans. He probably had a wry smile on his face thinking, that was me once upon a time, young man. But so as soon as he nails Marc Marquez, Acosta's starting to look a little bit leery, and you can tell he's starting to struggle with the grip, but it was only a matter of time before he started to plummet. But he was holding on pretty well. But it was about seven laps to go, and you could just tell Acosta's tyres are finished. and I was getting worried he was actually going to make it in the points in the end. I thought you could start to see him smoking the rear tyre, and it's like, oh, he's got no rear tyre left whatsoever. But he hung on really, really, really well. But whilst all this is going on, Fabio Quartararo has managed to get up to 10th on the Yamaha, which I think is quite an achievement at that point. quite an achievement. And there's a bit of a Japanese manufacturer sort of scuffle, skirmish going on. There's like Quartararo in 10th, there's Mir in 12th, Rins and Zarco, with the Augusto Fernandez after an issue on the grid and some technical issues, and a rather disgraced Bezzecchi struggling, thinking, what on earth am I doing down here? I'm a Ducati rider, get me out of here. I should be near the front. What am I doing down here? So it was really disappointing to see him down there, but I was semi-encouraged to see the Yamaha, yeah, up in 10th, but then you look at the actual the distance that they are from the front, and it's far from encouraging, which is quite unfortunate. We need to see riders like Quartararo up near the front. That's what we want. So five to go, and my hopes of a really fun and classic last few laps are kind of over by this point, because it's all spread out. It's all got a bit too Formula One at the front, and it's spread out quite a bit. Binder kept threatening, kept putting in some laps and maybe pulling back Naya in at one point. Like, did any of you guys think Binder could actually get Bagnaia? Because at one point the gap came down from 1.1 to 0.8 pretty much in a lap, and I don't know whether that was a mistake from Bagnaia or Binder like dropping his lap time, but I was like, this could actually be on. Binder's saved loads and loads and loads of tire, but no, he hadn't, unfortunately. The biggest battle we're going to get was Martin versus Binder, and they couldn't do anything about it, really. That's a really shame. They kind of very much stayed sort of status quo towards the end. One person who was making moves in a very light charge was Bastianini on the other Ducati, managing to come, but he was quite far down during the early race, and he managed to come back through and get his bike up into fifth. So I thought that was quite a good ride, Adam.
Yeah, I think if Bastianini can get a solid start and not make those kind of little mistakes he was making, running wide or just outbreaking himself, I think that the next race or two, I think he could be up front with Pecco.
He needs to get a bit of consistency, doesn't he? Because he took quite a battering last year to his reputation and his confidence. So I think it was good to see him take a win late on. And if he can get a bit of rhythm to his ride, then hopefully he'll have a good season. But I thought he did a solid race. He sat there for quite a while and then made the move when he thought he could move forward.
He took quite a battering to his body as well, to be fair, last year. He had some nasty, nasty injuries. I think it was a bad shoulder injury they had last year, and I've had some pretty gnarly shoulder injuries myself, and I've full sympathy. They're horrible. Very, very horrible. So we didn't really get the white knuckle ending that we were looking for. So basically, Bagnaia comes over the line to take an absolutely, well, say 1.3 seconds from second. That's an absolutely dominant win in modern day MotoGP, I would say, and it was beautifully and perfectly controlled. Like, hats off. Binder was second. Jorge Martin rounds out the podium in third. I would have really loved to see Marc Marquez on the podium, but he was sensible. What I do love to see Marc Marquez is not in the gravel trap, which is what we've become so accustomed of like the last few years. So the fact that he stayed on and rode a very meek, mild fourth, I think is an ominous sign, really. It looks like the thing. So, Danny, do you think he's stopped crashing now? He's finally got on the bike that's not trying to kill him.
I was just about to say, did he have a crash this weekend? I can't remember seeing him in the gravel. I genuinely can't remember the last time I can say that about Marc Marquez. I think he's altered his riding style that much. He just looks way more in control. So, yeah, fingers crossed he don't hit the deck as often as he used to.
Yep. And so Enea Bastianini was a late charge up into fifth. And also somebody we haven't mentioned at all in the show is Alex Marquez, Marc Marquez's brother and teammate. That's bizarre. So I believe they live with each other. They're now teammates as well. And they're all brothers. It's quite bizarre. They must have some very, very proud parents. So he was up into sixth and looking really strong as well, to be honest. Because he's been a bit of a crasher in recent years, so it was nice to see him stay on. Fabio De Gianantonio comes home seventh, so it's nice to see him get a solid result after showing so much promise and his rather worrying crash in the sprint, so he's got no ill effects from that. Aleix Espargaró, a rather mystified eighth, blaming his tyre, but we think he might have just taken a gamble on the tyre pressure that hasn't paid off. Pedro Acosta, a rather spectacular ninth, if there ever was one, and a fantastic debut. Probably didn't get the points to really, worthy of his effort, but what a fantastic ride ride, and what a fantastic impression I think he's made on the whole paddock and the whole of MotoGP this weekend, and it's got everyone really excited. And Maverick Vinales and the other Aprilia rounding out the top 10. That was how the race sort of panned out. It wasn't exactly as we thought. It wasn't exactly, you know, what maybe we were looking for, but I thought that was brilliant. I was excited throughout the whole race. It could have kicked off at any time. And as ever, we like to sort of wrap up these shows with who we think is our rider of the race and our moment of the race. So we'll start with our rider of the race, and that is my one, which is going to be Bagnaia. He absolutely flawless. He got and pushed to the front, got there, did exactly what he had to do, and he never really looked like he was going to dominate the race all weekend, and he did it again. He turned around on Sunday. So hats off, Pecco. I give that to you. That was absolutely amazing. What a strong ride, and a double world champion worthy ride. Danny, who was your rider of the race?
Yes, I'm glad I get to go second. I'm taking Pedro Acosta. He was incredible. Other than Bagnaia, obviously Bagnaia did an amazing job, but Pedro Acosta, I thought, was just fun, entertaining, had a go at everybody, did exactly what I was hoping he would do. I'm not really too fussed that he dropped down the order afterwards. I'd rather him chuck the kitchen sink at it and have a go and see how high up he could get. But yeah, great debut. Really interesting to see how he does the rest of the season.
Totally agree. Jules, who was your rider of the race?
Yeah, I'm third, so I need to take the least or less obvious one. I want to give a shout out to Franco Morbidelli, because I think no one thought of Jorge Martin's teammate this whole weekend, because we didn't see him, but he was there, and you'd almost forget that he switched from the Yamaha to the 24 Ducati. But he missed all of the preseason test because of a nasty crash. He missed the Friday late practice because of the rain. So he started dead last, and he climbed up, I think, four places to P18. And his team principal, he after the race, he mentioned like that he was really, really satisfied with how Franco did. And I think if he can get back in shape, that he could be a really interesting rider to keep an eye on, because he changed the team and he's got a really, really good bike.
That's a really good point. And yeah, he had a nasty, nasty leg break, I think it was, not that long ago. So that's why he's got no testing time. So Adam, who was your rider of the race?
I'm going to go with Brad Binder. He killed it. He dragged the KTM up to second place both days. I mean, he's showing some great pace on that bike, and he's put in that bike where nobody would really expect it, you know, ahead of seven other Ducatis. And it's astounding, really, especially if you compare him to his teammate. I mean, yeah, but I think Binder can get a couple of sprint wins this weekend or this year. Hopefully he can get a GP win. I think he can do it.
Yeah, that's really good. That's a shout. It's probably a shout for rider of the weekend, to be honest, not just the race. He was very, very solid all weekend. So we will finish on our moment of the race, and my one was around lap 5 and Acosta's surge forward and him starting to put some moves on people and really getting his elbows out. I thought that was absolutely superb. Danny, what was your moment of the race?
Bagnaia going for it. I actually thought it was good to see him come off the line and just go all out, try and get to the front as quick as he could do. We're used to seeing him sit there doing the thinking man's race, so to see him take a different approach and actually gun it off the line and get to the front as quick as he could, I thought was really good.
Yeah, that's good. Jules, what was your moment of the race?
I'm going to go for that second and decisive attack by Binder on Jorge Martin. He was lining up his first attack for a couple of laps. He made it work. And then with 12 to go, Martin takes P2 back, but overtaking him on the straight. And then a lap later, already Binder did the exact same thing. They both go wide, but he makes it stick. I thought it was really a message he sent about his intentions.
Yeah, that's a good one. And Adam, finally for you.
So I'm kind of following you by seeing Acosta. I had the moment of the race for me, because seeing a kid like that ride a GP bike looking like a Moto2 bike was just awesome. It was just a breath of fresh air, because a lot of these guys ride with the bike planted. You don't see too many riders nowadays just sliding into corners, drifting both wheels, essentially. It was just really cool to see, especially when he was just lighting up the rear, just not caring about the tires mid-race, and you could just see the smoke pouring out of it. At night, I mean, that's just, it's cool to see. It just, yeah, it makes me smile just thinking about it.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Well, thank you very much for joining me for this race review, gentlemen. Adam, how would we follow you in the real world?
So I'm all over the place. I travel to a lot of different races, and I recently made an Instagram account. You can look for me at adam.grandprixtravel, and I run a subreddit as well, try to help people kind of get some travel tips and things like that. On Reddit, the subreddit is called Grand Prix Travel, and we do meetups kind of at several races all over the world. I just posted some details about a meetup happening in Melbourne if anybody's out there for F1. I'll probably do a meetup in Austin for MotoGP as well, which is April. The week before that, though, I'm going to be in Japan at Suzuka. So, yeah, it should be a good time.
That's awesome. I'm so jealous. Jules, how could people get hold of you?
I'm on Twitter, at Jules Segers. So, you could find me, or you could just scroll through the Mist Apex Twitter posts, and you'll find me there somewhere.
And finally, Danny, how would people get hold of you if they would want to? I would no reason why anyone would want to get hold of you.
I was going to say, I'm like Beetlejuice. You say the name three times and I appear. I'm on Twitter, Danny Henny F1. I know it's not MotoGP, but it's a handle. And other than that, you can see me in the Mist Apex iRacing Championship on the 29th of March.
Absolutely, that's good. And you can get hold of me on Twitter as well. I am at Kyle Power F1. Don't let the F1 deceive you. So that was the MotoGP review of the Qatar Grand Prix for Mist Apex. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks for the review of the Grand Prix of Portugal at Portimão. Now, that is an amazing circuit, and that hopefully is a bit of a better race. Thank you very much for listening, and until next time, goodbye.